This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Matthew Pegas and Brandon Adamson, and we're going to be discussing the Kuiper Wars.
Yep, good to be here, Robert. I think this is a good show to do because I think that the dissident right is really making news headlines again, so I think it's necessary to kind of continue in the vein that the show has always been in, you know, covering the alternative right and the dissident right, to talk about this latest episode.
So when was the official, like, well, there was the whole, basically, like, there was the official collapse of the alt-right brand. Let me think, that was 2017, basically.
I would say, you and Brandon are actually probably better historians of this than myself, but I would say, you know, basically Charlottesville would be the common sense point at which...
I think it was more like at end of 2017, early 2018, I think that... and there really was no official collapse because there really never was anything official to begin with, but I would say that we actually did a show about that, remember? The alt-right implosion, which was...
Charlottesville, and then there was this massive wave of deplatforming, and then basically...
Well, and then don't forget, like, the traditionalist workers' party with, like, you know, the whole situation with, like...
The trailer park fight.
Yeah,
although, you know, Matt Tarrant has, to his credit, has made a bit of a comeback. You know, I don't know whatever happened to Heimbach. I think he's, he's gone.
Yeah, that's my impression as well. But Matt Parrott has made a comeback. There was two elements to it. One was it was always controversial to be call yourself all right, but it became absolutely toxic. And then the other thing was this Tower of Babel moment where there was always infighting, but what once had some degree of a kind of at least unity in memes and support for Trump really started to unravel as well. And we're still in that moment, but there's this kind of new thing that's going on.
Yeah, well, I mean, I have a lot of my own thoughts about that retroactive. I don't believe that the collapse of it was something that was totally organic. I think that it was, after it got big enough to a certain extent and there's violence and so forth. I think that it was decided by some people that, like, you know, hey, we got to take this thing down a notch. Like, we need to nip this in the bud and. You know, so I think that the mistakes and things like that were exploited by outsiders who had really decided to kind of take these people, knock them down a peg or two.
Mm-hmm. So what's happening now is, as far as making a comeback, is this is with Nick Fuentes and the Groypers. And obviously they would reject the label, right? That's a toxic label. Absolutely no one is using that now, but they would... I guess they would describe themselves as the America First Movement. And that was a term that was used in the beginning of the original Trump movement. And it's basically... this all started when there was this woman, Ashley St. Clair, who was involved. She was like a social media celebrity type who was involved with Turning Point USA, which basically it's a sort of establishment conservative outlet But the thing is, they're part of the conservative establishment, but they go out of their way to, they try to present themselves as being edgy and youthful.
Yeah, they're like the young conservative movement. You know, you had, I wasn't alive in the 80s, but you had movements like that in the 80s too. Just very economically, fiscally conservative people, but their appeal to the young is just a kind of fresh-faced, you know, suit-wearing aesthetic.
Yeah, pretty much. And what's happening is, so Ashley St. Clair, she was fired by Charlie Kirk from Turning Point to USA because she was in a, she posed in a photo with Nick Fuentes. So Nick Fuentes has been basically encouraging his followers to go to these Turning Point USA. It's a college tour across the country. There was one nearby at UCLA, and that one actually, they shut down the Q&A, so the Groypers just sort of, they heckled Donald Trump Jr. And that happened mostly, they've been asking questions of Charlie Kirk and other figures there, like Congressman Dan Crenshaw. Well, what's interesting about them is they do, so like the alt-right rejected conservatism with Nick Fuentes. I think he does identify as a conservative to some degree. Like he would, like more of like a paleo-conservative. And paleo-conservatism, that was a, like that was a big movement as a sort of anti, like the anti-Bush right that was opposed to the Iraq War and like non-interventionist, immigration restrictionist, but still sort of connected to Americanism and conservatism. And that's basically how I describe Nick Fuentes. So his supporters have been showing up at these Turning Point USA events and asking questions dealing with like demographic change, immigration
asking
policy,
the tough questions, basically.
Foreign policy, like war, non-intervention issues.
Yeah, basically questions. Most of them boil down to three things, two of which I can appreciate, one of which I kind of loathe. They are economic populism / nationalism, which I can absolutely get behind, as well as foreign policy, which I can also basically get behind. They ask that from a sort of more nationalist perspective. But then the third element would be their utter embrace of Christianity, and they focus a lot on Turning Point USA being supposedly pro-gay, things like that. So there's a kind of a more of a basic social conservatism there as well.
Well, that's also interesting because the conservative movement has actually gone way to the left on social issues. I mean, back in the Bush issue, back in the Bush era, the religious right had a very powerful, strong presence. And Turning Point USA, I mean, they're almost kind of like social libertarians. They're very pro-gay. They have a drag queen performer, Lady MAGA. They have a lot of openly gay speakers. So they are, I'm not sure. I mean, they are pro-life. They're against abortion. But on the gay issue, they advocate like a much more inclusive stance towards homosexuality. And Nick Fuentes is more opposed to things like homosexuality. So that's definitely a theme. And Matt, you were saying that's an element that you don't necessarily agree with Nick on.
Yeah, definitely on that specific issue and on the embrace of Christianity and, you know, Catholicism in general. I just don't think it's strategically or intellectually a good step.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. But I also wanted to mention real quick, though, that you talked about their appearances, and then their recent one, like North Carolina, I think, was or one of these other states, Charlie Kirk actually came back, and he actually kind of like, you know, mop the floor with these dudes by pointing out some of their inconsistencies in positions. Like, and I've mentioned this in the past on a lot of different shows, but these Graper people, they're all like these Trump supporters, right? They're all kind of like hardcore Trump supporters. Nick Fuentes, but. And I've pointed this out a million times. Like when Trump ran, he ran on Buchanan's foreign policy, kind of, and the immigration stuff. But he ran as a social centrist or social moderate. I mean, as far as like quote degeneracy, I mean, Trump may be like one of the most degenerate presidents ever. I mean, he's been divorced multiple times. He cheated on all his wives. He has kids from different mothers, and he has he's slept with porn stars. Like, you know, like it's a mystery to me. Like, why do they even claim this guy as their own? Like, they should be, you know, they should be elevating like Pat Robertson or something like that. And
yeah, I know they come scarily close to that for me sometimes. They types of Christianity they advocate. This isn't like, you know, Richard Spencer saying he used to say like I'm culturally Christian. It's nothing to do with like, oh, we need this to get people. Like, it's very sincere, like philosophic Christianity that just you know, with all those values.
Well, you know, kind of, but I would also say that like a lot of those people are young, and one of the big problems I have with all of this is that they think that they're like, they're taking things in some bold new direction, like, oh, this is where the alt-right got all this stuff wrong, and we're going in this direction now. But like, you know, I already lived through this. You say you weren't a kid in the 80s. Well, like, I was. Like, I remember all of this, like, the Christian Coalition, like, you know, the youth Christians, all this, like, the early 90s religious right. And, I mean, in 1992, the Republican National Convention was, the theme was family values. You can look that up. And even, like, you know, the whole thing with, like, Dan Quayle and Murphy Brown, like, it's like, dude, like, you're not going in a new direction. Like, this is like I waited like so long for some kind of like nationalism or pro-white politics that wasn't associated with like this prudish, like, you know, people freaking out if there's like a nipple shown on TV, and like this, the whole like mocking, like ranting about sodomites and things and like demons and going to hell. Like, dude, like you grew up too late, man. Like, that's like the whole thing that we were like trying to get away from.
I completely agree. Yeah.
So, I mean, I could go on and on about that, but,
about Richard Spencer and, well, here's the thing with Richard Spencer is that my views on race are probably much more moderate than him. But what I do like about Richard Spencer is he wanted to create something that was new and fresh, and it was basically outside of the standard American conservatism, and that applies to economically and socially. His views were outside of the conservative spectrum, but also his sort of aesthetic and cultural interest. And with Nick Fuentes, I mean, I think, don't get me wrong, I think it's fantastic what they're doing. If it does, like, I think it has,
oh, you
does
do?
Have.
I don't.
Well, it has some. It does. Like, I don't think it's going to make a difference in the big picture. I mean, I think it does cause some harm to the image of Turning Point USA. But the thing is, it's still a kind of extension of conservatism, and I think conservatism as an ideology, I think it needs to be kind of discarded and replaced with something new. And it's sort of,
yeah, kind
it's,
of
I see it as
progressivism.
Yeah, like, if you want to call it alt progressivism or alt centrism or a lot of these different labels. The thing is, it's sort of what's like going on between like Nick and Turning Point USA is it's like a continuation between these kind of past internal conservative battles that have been going on for basically throughout the 90s and into the Bush era.
Yeah, what I wrote earlier, and I think this is a good way of putting it, at least for me, for starters, I think that the interesting thing about this show and about Brandon's website, the kind of niche we've spelled out within the dissident right, is that there's such an emphasis on aesthetics, to the point where it's almost like any sort of dissident view that you might hold, Robert, or that you might write about Brandon, you know, it's almost the end goal is just living in a more aesthetically desirable society. Like, that's kind of at the forefront of a lot of what we've talked about. I think that's a unique niche. And I think from that perspective, I look at both Turning Point USA and the Nick Fuentes America First crowd. And I kind of see them both as manifesting what I would call ugly conservatism, by which
I completely agree. And I think that, you know, you bring up something that like, that I wanted to mention too, which was that, you know, we want to live in a certain kind of society, right? And what I found with a lot of these, like these treadcast people and whatnot, and you can see it in them, is that they like, you know, what it comes down to ultimately is since they're almost their number one emphasis and priority is on Christianity, that they would actually be okay with living in a third world country or with third world standard of living, so long as everyone accepts Jesus. And like the most perfect example of that is kind of their celebration of like Kanye's new album, which, you know, in my opinion, like I was raised Catholic. I was, you know, I raised nominally Catholic. I went through the sacraments and whatnot. And like, to me, like I said, like to see those people, like, well, you know, it's great that he's embracing Jesus. It's like they would accept him before they would like a white pagan or a white atheist, even though like his manifestation of Christianity is like, it's just a totally like illiterate gibberizzle. Basically, like, so I don't know. I think that's one thing, but, you know, to go a little bit deeper, I don't think all of this is necessarily genuine. I think some of these people, associated with this, Griper movement or whatever, I think some of them are definitely sincere. Some of the people who are going here and asking these questions are sincere, but I think that really a large part of it is kind of a, it's an op, and what it's designed to do is to lure people away from the racial identitarianism, to lure them away by using, baiting them with like edgy fun memes, and you know, hinting at you know, throwing the red meat out there about Israel and occasionally race and like homosexuality. I mean, the stuff that the crowd just goes wild for, you know, like the people always do. That was like how the Daily Stormer got so popular. But here you have them throwing out this red meat stuff. But when you look at their ideology, like that's, none of that stuff really fits into the overall framework of what they believe. Like they ultimately don't care much about race. Like not as much as like they're not advocating for an ethno state or something. Even like cryptically, they're not really. So and the stuff with related to even the Jew stuff, it doesn't even like tackle it from a racial issue. It's based largely on like foreign policy and religious doctrine. Like right, that's like E. Michael Jones. Like he, you know, they love this guy, but a lot of his like critique of it is just based on doctrine. It's not based on like, you know, it's not as much based on like on tribalism. And so what they're doing is they're trying to lure people and de-radicalize them away from the racial stuff, away from kind of clean up the remnants of the post-alt-right. And then what you'll see is incrementally their positions get more moderate. And we've already seen that with some of these people saying, look, you know, don't ask these types of questions at these things. They're going to make us look bad, and they're slowly getting more moderate. I think like Scott Greer had a post where he's like, okay, can we stop asking about the gay stuff now? And it's like, you know, which, you know, Matt and I, like, you know, we don't care about that stuff. But you see what the plan is, to lure people away from these more radical and revolutionary ideas and towards something that's back onto the reservation, and then incrementally moderate these positions until you see them say, well, like, I forget who it was, like Patrick Casey or someone, where he said, oh, well, you know, I'm still opposed to mass immigration, but blah, 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 blah. So you see, like, they're already winding it down to these, like, what were just, like, basic bitch GOP positions, like 10 years ago. And I believe that will continue. And furthermore, it doesn't offer any kind of framework. And I think you kind of hinted at this, Matt, which is that, and none of these, quote, these America First or MNATs or whatever, they can never articulate a response to this. And you say, like, what is your plan to win, like, California's 54 electoral votes in Florida and all these places that you have to win in order to win the country? And, like, are they really going to like run a candidate whose platform is like they want to ban pornography and you know, mocking homosexuals and ban abortion and all of this stuff is Christian zealotry. Like, you couldn't even win with that in like Georgia.
The thing about what you were saying about, like, you were saying about watering down their message, and the thing is, there's like, you have to kind of take into account like the Overton window and what's acceptable, the direction of the Overton window. So basically, as far as what Turning Point USA is advocating, is Turning Point USA, their view is that America is just a nation based on ideas, that it's not a nation really. They don't think of it in terms of like the people who live here and or the geographic region. They just think of it as a placeholder for, as Charlie Kirk would say, timeless ideas. And basically those ideas could be transplanted basically anywhere in the world. And that's almost like an extreme form of like liberalism. And basically what Nick Fuentes, his position is, it's more, a lot more moderate than the alt-right, but it's basically comparable to what Pat Buchanan was saying 15 years ago. So it's sort of like, his supporters have brought up a lot of questions as far as demographics go. So
Buchanan was actually much more explicit on race than these people are. And like I said, it doesn't have anything to do with the Overton window. Like it's, the whole thing is like an operation to de-radicalize people and bring them back into the system away from these more revolutionary ideas.
Yeah, like, well, I think one of the key, Richard Spencer retweeted Nick Fuentes in a negative sense on this recently, but the key difference is the view of America and what America means, and whether we're living in a post-American world, which I think is plainly the truth, and that our politics should be right, post-American, or whether there's some kind of, well, you know, obviously everyone got behind Make America Great Again at some point, but some people interpreted that, you know, in a post-American way, whereas other people, it sincerely is, like, this idea of a revival of a kind of Americanism or an allegiance to something old. And I think that's one of the key differences between the kind of American identity new wing of the post-alt-right and the old guard, and I would say
like, you know, kind of adding on to your point, because I think we're kind of in agreement here, is like this whole idea of paleoconservatism, where you're going to restore the founders' America or the 1950s traditional America or Catholic America or something like that. Like, you know, that only works like up until, like, we're dealing with in most of these places, like, in the U.S., and this is why U.S. is a lot different than Europe, like, the replacement has already happened. So, you know, if I'm making the argument to the, whatever, my neighborhood, which is, like, mostly been replaced by, like, Indians and Middle Eastern people, like, in Phoenix, like, I'm making the argument that, like, yeah, we're going to restore 1950s America or the founders of Christian, like, this is already, like, totally alien people. Like, the replacement has already happened. Like, that only works maybe in a place like Norway or some of these European countries, where there's still like 90% of the, or 80 or 90% of the native population. Here it's more like, I think officially it might be like 60% or something, but I think it's even lower if you look at actually all of the undocumented. I mean, you live in California, like, you know what exactly.
Oh,
what,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Like, yeah, yeah. And I mean,
and,
I think,
you know,
someone
try campaigning on that, you know, restoring Catholicism or something, like, try doing that in like downtown LA or something, or Koreatown. So
yeah,
you're just,
well, they
get,
might,
like,
be open to the Catholic part, but because they're all Hispanic. But yeah, and I mean, I think that some more NRX type people, maybe, which I don't necessarily identify with, but even Richard Spencer would argue that where the United States is now was kind of always baked into the cake. It's always been a kind of liberal project.
Yeah, well, but he always says that it's already like the demographic replacement is already at a point where, like, you can no longer elect people based on these sorts of issues. So, you know, you can either, so you have to go in these radical other directions and start thinking of terms, well, like, what does a post-America look like? What could a potential division of states look like? Or what, or what would like a multi-ethnic state, different directions?
Yeah, post-American ideologies, and there's different versions of that. So that's the whole thing.
You don't have to choose one.
There's very kind of moderate versions of that. But to start off with Fuentes, so yeah, I basically agree with you. So as far as race goes, I understand if you're perceived as taking a hardline stance on race, you're going to be totally ostracized. So maybe there's that issue. Besides race, there's also the concept of Americanism, and obviously the two overlap. So Fuentes is very focused on restoring America, but you could have a post-American ideology that's pretty moderate. Like, even though, I guess the way to describe it, kind of like neo-tribalism, where different groups kind of like share the same geographic region, but they have sort of their own separate identities, and where people live amongst other groups, but their identity is connected to their own groups. So that's more sort of like a neo-tribalism, or it doesn't even have to be like an ethnic division where people maybe, like one example is a sort of like people's loyalty is to maybe a specific like aesthetic rather than to the whole nation as a whole, kind of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, and I think that's the direction that it would be headed on. But like, what kind of throws a wrench in it is that, the people in charge in the system, like they know that, and that's why they like, you know, they dump Somalis into like Minnesota and like Idaho, and these super white places, because it's like they dump them in these different areas so that people can't like, form their own kind of solid enclaves where that could be built into potential eventual separatist movements, right? Because like there, you could say, well, you know, we're all just going to have to go to Montana, and that's what we'll then we'll secede and we'll make our stand. Like I used to think about that kind of stuff, and like I still do, but when, you know, they're not that stupid, you know, so they'll go ahead and dump like 10,000 Syrian refugees or something into the middle of Montana, and that's why like a lot of this whole thing of some of these people that are just like, oh, you know, just you know, work a good job and go to church and volunteer in your community and like and just focus on making your community a better place and like and then everything will all fall into place. It's like, well, that's all fun and games until like the government just decides to like to dump a few thousand people from Africa like into your neighborhood.
There's actually this region of Montana that I think it's near where it's sort of associated with white nationalism, and that's basically where all these refugees from the Congo have been being sent.
Yeah, of course. Like, see, they're not that stupid. And like, yeah, no, I remember that Montana project. That was like kind of an old school white nationalism, which you've been around a long time, so I'm sure you remember that too, when that was like Kalispell, Montana, I think is the name of it. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, how it was all those articles like 10 years ago that these like white nationalists were all focusing on getting everyone to move to this town.
I mean, that's perceived as like the more an idea of like having a vast geographic region that's for one particular group, and then sort of like moderate watered down version of like a neo-tribalism where people share kind of the same region, but where people sort of identify more as their group, and the latter is
yeah,
what I see.
Well,
that's
I mean,
that's
kind
basically
of,
yeah. That's sort of
that's
I mean,
cities.
That's all, yeah, that's basically what you see in major cities: L.A., New York, San Francisco, with immigrant groups. But white people tend to be like much more individualistic. But I do predict, like, I don't. That's probably where the future will end up happening. In the future.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. Like, I probably won't live long enough to see all that, but it's going to be an interesting couple of decades.
As soon as the demographic trends make it impossible for the Republican Party to win national elections, which I think is very soon, like 2024, 2028.
I think it could even be 2020.
Yeah, very well, could be.
I think this election will be very telling. I think no matter what happens, I think it will be very telling about what the next 8 years after will look like.
Well, I don't necessarily think that they'll like never be able to win again. But I think it's going to be transformed in a way that is like undesirable. It's kind of like I was getting at before. It's like you may end up with someone winning that's like kind of like a Kanye Christian figure, like a celebrity, you know, or something like that, or that's like,
yeah.
The GOP might be taken over by like a base, like a some kind of like a Muslim or something like that, and you'll see this triangulation. It's like maybe they can win, but it's not going to be like, you know, it's not going to be anything that I would want to a society I'd want to live in. I think like you know, people were talking about the news story about like wanting to colonize Mars or something, and Ramsey Paul made a joke like, you know, in 20 years, like, we won't have indoor plumbing. Like, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, if you live in California, like, I used to live in Los Angeles, and like, you know, obviously there are still a lot of nicer parts, but like, you know, is it that far off before, like, you know, they already will like turn off the power on people for like long periods of time, and it's like it'll only be a matter of time before like the sewer system is completely unusable or something like that. Like, they have rats, they have the plague. Like, this is like the stuff that if you would go to, you know, you go to Africa, you're gonna have. That's what it's gonna be like when you go
the,
to LA. Like,
the only difference, yeah, and it's already kind of like that in LA in parts. I mean, the only difference is gonna be, it might be somewhat different than Africa, is that there'll be a much more substantial upper class that is above it all, you know, and they're flying cars.
Another criticism of Nick Fuentes was from the kind of like, it was from someone from the more kind of like trad workers crowd, who are more like, they're ultra socially conservative, but they're more left wing economically, which is that's an interesting phenomenon. They were criticizing Fuentes for being too conservative economically.
Interesting. I actually don't know that much about his economic views. I mean, I know that he's would be to the quote unquote left of Turning Point USA. So in that sense, I agree with him, but I haven't done a deep dive there.
Well, he doesn't actually talk that much about economics.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he's not a free market guy, obviously, because he's based.
Yeah,
in
I'm familiar
culture,
with some of his positions. He's more like kind of more of an economic populist, where he supports like regulation on businesses and things like that, kind of.
Yeah, and I know he like
similar
Yang
to Buchanan
somewhat.
or some of these other people, but I mean, I think that what I see the most from that is just the number one emphasis is on Christianity and like the U.S. being a Christian, this Christian zealotry. And I like I said, I was raised Catholic, and you know, part of me kind of like, this is like, I don't know. It's almost like it's such a like an empty identity for a lot of these people. Now he himself is probably grew up Catholic and is probably sincere, but I think that I kind of resent it, you know, because I resent like being lectured by these people. Like, I went through the sacraments and whatnot, and obviously, like, I'm not a believer or anything like that. I long ago lost interest in that kind of thing. But you see these other people that are like, you know, they watched a YouTube video and suddenly they're Catholic and they're,
yeah,
like,
okay,
you know,
I have a lot of thoughts on this. Yeah.
Trad preachers, like, what, you know, it's like, and you know, my feeling is like, you know, you get like, get off your soapbox and like quit preaching to people. Like, just because you became Catholic out of nowhere, like, all of these people, like, none of them live according to like religious, these standards. Like, they've had premarital sex. You know, they're like,
oh, probably not
cheating.
Even
they're cheating
they
on their significant others.
Yeah,
they're, you know, they smoke weed. They're having premarital sex. Like, the ones that have girlfriends, like, they're living with their girlfriends and they're not married. And it's just like, it's like, why don't you, if you're going to like convert or like embrace religion or whatever, like, is it too much to ask that you just like, you know, pipe down and just like try to live according to these standards, like for like at least 5 or 10 years before like you get up on your high horse and like start calling everyone degenerates?
The whole kind of trad scenes, it's basically all like LARPing. Like, you'll have some guy on Twitter and he's like posting trad memes, but on the other, he has the other tab open to like porn, and he's he's jerking off and posting like trad memes. So,
and
yeah,
a lot of them will self-deprecatingly joke about that.
Look, I actually don't mind that as much. If someone's like, if someone has a sense of humor about it and they just want to kind of, you know, articulate that there could be some value to these sort of traditional values, I don't have a problem with that. But I actually think that the America First crowd, I appreciate your point, Brandon, but I actually think a lot of them are way more sincere as Catholics and Christians than a lot of the other kind of crowd that we've seen from the alt-right. I mean, I think they follow after E. Michael Jones, in that they really do think this is the answer.
But they're sincere because it's like, it's what they've just discovered. You know, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, like, it was something else. It's something that, like, what these people do is they immediately transfer their zealotry onto something new.
Yeah.
Like that is what they consistently do. And that's like what you see with all of these memes and everything. It's like every new one, they fucking go like, they go gung ho into every new one. And it's like, you see, you look at their profile, like some of these people, their profiles, their online personas are like entirely constructed around these, like, these stupid memes for, you know, for a month or 2 months or 6 months. And I think that you're right that they may be, a lot of them are sincere, but I think that there is also, some of it is insincere in the sense that, like, they think that it's a good way to, like, win over rubes.
It's kind of ties in with the theme of social conservatism, because there was an aspect, you could say, of the old guard of the distant right, even someone like Richard Spencer, the rule of the Dionysian, the chaotic, basically represented a sort of a Crowleyan do as that will, as opposed, which is sort of in contrast, the sort of, more of a Nietzschean mindset.
Yeah, there is a more of a Nietzschean mindset, which I think is completely lacking from the Fuentes crowd. More of a sort of a Crowleyan do what thou wilt sort of idea, where it was tapping into an energy. It was kind of an anti-repressive philosophy. There was an element of that. That's what I found in it when I first got interested. It was like all this, you know, all this stuff, all these ways that you've kind of civilized yourself and adapted to living in a liberal society, you know, as a white male, all of these things, you know, throw away and sort of be liberated, even, you know, to whatever, and whatever that means, like, not a rules-based thing, just like, yeah, like, you know, express your natural will, like this kind of right-wing Crowleyanism. That there was that, and that obviously can be very dangerous. Like, there needs to be checks on things like that. But at the same time, the old guard of the alt-right really tapped into that. And the appeal of the America First, Logos Rising, Tradcath crowd is much more, it's like I like that movie, The Joker, so I don't want to put it down too much, but it's like, oh, you're a, what's that guy's name? Oh, you're an Arthur Fleck, you know, you're an incel, you're sad, you know, this world is chaotic and painful. Come to Catholicism, and like these traditional values, like, will heal that pain. Like, that's kind of what I see from that. So they're coming from the same place, because both of them attach onto what I think are very real social issues, but the one is creatively and aesthetically very interesting to me. I like this tremendous this tremendous energy that's tapped into when you kind of, you know, throw away any idea of morality,
right?
Versus this idea of like, oh, there's that this will make you feel better if you subscribe to conservatism. And I think the former has much more power, and like, if that can be tapped into, the world really can be transformed by that. But these whole things of like, oh, like if you think more rationally about things and kind of give in to the logos of Catholicism. This will make you feel better. I don't see that as something that has a lot of historical precedent for really transforming anything. It's a way of actually muting yourself as opposed to
Right. It's actually like kind of similar to, I think in the Bible where it's like they kind of intelligence and thinking about things is kind of frowned upon. They want you to just be stupid and then just accept things. And that's like kind of a lot of what they want to go back to is when the church had more of a hierarchy and everything was kind of dictated to these people from the top down, and you were just supposed to accept it. Like when the church had problems when people were able to, became literate and were able to read the Bible, like with the printing press and whatnot, they were able to read the Bible and like interpret it for themselves.
I
was going to say that also, like, it's also interesting to me because a lot of these people like kind of are very like anti-Protestant, but in a way like they are kind of like neo-Protestants because they don't have any like official acceptance or representation like in the Catholic Church. Like they're doing what these like these Protestants were doing, which is basically just reading the Bible and like reinterpreting it for themselves and being like, no, this is what we have to go back to. Like they're supposed to, and even if like, you know, you don't necessarily have to listen to everything that the Pope says to be a Catholic, you know, there's the whole thing of like whether he's like infallible and whatnot, but it's like they don't have, you know, they're not in any official position to like be interpreting the Bible. Like they're not even, you know, not even like a priest. Like just average Joe. Like
and even the most conservative nationalistic Catholics in the actual Catholic Church would disavow America First and Nick Fuentes. Because find me someone who's as anti-Semitic as that group is. Like E. Michael Jones is he's pretty much the old wiser version of this crowd, and literally there's no one in the church that
he doesn't believe race exists. E. Michael Jones says that, so like that's
he does come across as fairly anti-Semitic, but more from a religious rather than ethnic standpoint.
Not just
like anti-Semitic though. Like I mean, he doesn't believe in race at all. Like he's only I think he made some really like bonkers kind of statement, like that there are only two races in America or something like Catholics and Protestants
Jews are the thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's just something just totally like retarded, you know, and like this is like their hero. I don't know.
We've discussed like ideological differences with Nick Fuentes and kind of criticism of hardcore social conservatism and holding on to the idea of Americanism and just basically kind of how Nick Fuentes is very much connected to kind of an extension of American conservatism, which has basically failed. But here's the question is, has what the Groyper's been doing had any significant impact on undermining Turning Point's USA?
Well, okay, so well, I
don't know. I think that. I mean, Turning Point's USA is basically irrelevant. So, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, all of this stuff occurs, like, in a very small bubble, in my opinion. Like, the average person who votes, like, you know, like they don't even know how to like place an order at Starbucks. Like they don't know about any of this, like this kind of esoteric shit. Like even though like a lot of it has been, in the national news and whatnot. Like nobody, Turning Points USA is irrelevant. Like this is just people like they're just playing to their own friends and their own like showing off to their own crowd. And in my opinion, what this is the next generation of where the next generation of the GOP where they pay lip service to these issues that like the rubes like like care about, but then slowly, like incrementally, like they moderate away from them and don't do anything about it. That's how like the system keeps on going, and like, you know, just don't let yourself get baited into all this stuff just because it looks so fun, you know, to this whole like culture of owning and all of that. Like, I mean, I'm interested in substance, man. Like, that's the thing. Not like, oh, you know, we're recapturing this energy of 2016 or something like that. You know, guess what? I don't even think that in 2016, out of that, all of that energy was entirely like organic either. Like, I think there's a good reason to believe that a lot of this, the Trump stuff, was like, it was just another way to like, you know, push, you know, migrate people from like these edgier beliefs, like kind of keep them back, get them back into the system, you know. And we saw like where we saw where that led us, right, with Trump. So you just, this is just kind of the next generation of that. And you know, that's what I think about the whole thing. And I'm not really advocating that people like be edgy or like become Nazis or anything like that, because like that's, I think that stuff is whack, even from like an aesthetic standpoint. I kind of agree with a lot of like what Colin Liddell says about that stuff, but at the same time, like, as far as like the Overton window and all of this stuff, like, look, the average person, like, they don't distinguish between like Nick Fuentes and Milo and like Andrew Anglin of the Daily Stormer. Like, it's all just Nazis. Like, these people can't, they don't pick up on these little nuances, you know. Like, they think Trump is a Nazi.
This is a point I want to make about Turning Points USA and about mainstream conservatism Inc. This hasn't really been brought up by Nick Fuentes and the Groypers, but it's important, like the issue of funding, the impact on money and politics, because part of the reason Turning Points is an organization that has massive backing by the GOP donor class, and there's this ultra-wealthy Republican donor who basically bankrolls them. And Charlie Kirk started out when there's some article out on Politico about this, when he was starting out as like a young Republican activist, and his dad was a contractor for Trump, so he had those connections. He went out of his way to meet with every Republican donor. And in the case of Ben Shapiro, he was also very well connected because he had family in Hollywood. I think the point I want to make is their thing is Charlie Kirk and Ben Shapiro are lecturing everyone else that they basically have to compete in this free market. And so they're basically telling these people who are just rank and file conservatives, a lot of whom are kind of just ordinary middle-class people who are fairly socially atomized. And the Groypers haven't really making this point, but to succeed either politically or culturally, it's very, very crucial to have some kind of backing from a donor. And the same people who are backed by donors are telling people that everything needs to be left up to the free market.
Yeah, no, that is a really good point. And you do see so much of these funded. Remember, like Rebel News, which was funded by like, you know, that wealthy guy in Canada, Ezra Levant. That was a kind of another target for a while. But and also like these groups like Turning Point USA, they really don't have like a whole lot of grassroots support. Like at all, and to the extent that they did that Ashley St. Clair was just because like she's like, you know, she's attractive, like that her following was based on that, you know what I mean? So like,
yeah.
That. Now that she's on TSA, even left, but like I also went, you know, I don't know. It's hard to say because like, you know, having like. Having watched some of these question and answer, like some of them are just so cringeworthy to me. Like even some of the questions that the crowd goes wild for, I think are just like, you know, it's just like low hanging fruit, you know, that the crowd goes wild for. But like really, like I think a lot of it is kooky, you know, to be honest.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
you know
I
what
think...
I mean, don't you, Matt? Like
yeah,
some of the questions that you clearly like, you know, the the like rank and file, like, you just go, they just go wild for this stuff. Like, you know, what is like, you know, what is, how does butt sex help us win the culture war or something?
Yeah,
like that.
No.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that the like the crowd goes with. But really, it's just like so juvenile, you know, that there's like,
because it's interesting, as Turning Point, they also use the term the culture war. We need a new culture war, but a culture war based on aesthetics rather than those token social issues like abortion and gay marriage.
Yeah, no, I would agree with something like that as well. I think that I like the idea of what they're doing, which is undermining this kind of conservative incorporated
message.
Yeah,
yeah.
I like the idea of that, but I don't think they're asking the good questions, and I think they're going in the wrong direction with it.
Oh yeah,
especially when they talk about social issues.
You're talking about like the culture war, like that made me think of something. It's kind of like when they say that, like, you know, they want to ban pornography because it's degenerate or something. Where it's like, my criticism of pornography is that like a lot of it is like too lowbrow, and they don't have good scripts. You know, like they need better like acting. You know, where it's like you know, more creative. Which like some of that actually exists now, but that's kind of like. That gets at kind of what you're talking about, like, Robert, like, yeah, we all want a culture war, but that doesn't mean that, like, it doesn't mean that we have the same kind of, it would be the same manifestation, like, in terms of what, so in a sense, when they say, like, these grapers or whatever say to these people, well, like, how does that help us win the culture war? Well, it's like, because they have a different, you know, idea of the kind of culture that they want to live in. Like, they, you know what I mean? Like, their idea of a culture is like an American, where people are kind of like free to be able to do what they want to do. You know, even as kind of cliche as that sounds, like, you can't say, well, like, how can you be like for a culture war if you think that like abortion is okay, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, because they have like, you know, they obviously have different priorities, different values for like, as far as the culture, like that. I mean, that is kind of, you know, the answer to give to that kind of question. But it's like, yeah, so just because like your idea of a culture war isn't everybody else's idea, you know. And that's the thing that I really think about all this stuff, is that, you know, sooner or later, like guys like you and me and Robert, you know, it's okay, like we don't have to always pretend to be on the same team as these people, you know. Like, we do all this stuff like over these years where we're just like, oh yeah, well, like we and this and it's like, you know, maybe we're like, we're not on the same team, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, no, I would say definitely not on the same team. I mean, what's interesting about what they're doing is that they're, you know, they're making headlines for the first time, you know, the dissident right's kind of making headlines for the first time.
It has caused some problems for Turning Point USA, because they've had some significant board members. One of their chapter leaders actually resigned. So it has, because they, their chapter leaders said like they didn't want to support Turning Points USA because the aspect of them not being sufficiently pro, not at all being pro free speech, because of shutting down the Q&A. So it has caused like chaos for Turning Point USA. So I guess to kind of wrap things up in the show is, I do think it's sort of interesting, the theme of causing chaos for conservatism, Inc. But the thing is, I sort of do enjoy, like, and do enjoy watching that, but in the long term, I don't really know. I don't think it will necessarily have a huge political impact.
I don't think so either, because I think if it keeps, it's either going to, I think there's a good chance it'll die down the same way that the Yang Gang memes did. And if it doesn't do that, if it keeps escalating, then Trump's going to disavow it. I mean, they already probably made a bad choice by. And Fuentes would say they weren't heckling Don Jr., that they were only heckling Charlie Kirk, but effectively they were heckling Don Jr., then Donald Trump is going to disavow them, and then they'll look pretty stupid, because they, you know, they have an ideology outside of just what Trump says, of course, obviously, but at the same time, they really do, you know, they wear the MAGA hats and stuff, they really do think that they're a manifestation of Trumpism circa 2016, so if he disavows them, I don't know what they would do. They're having real-world effects in the sense that they're making headlines, and people like to see people like Don Jr. Humiliated. So they've kind of cracked that code. I think there's kind of been a media blackout on the alt-right since 2017, which I think was a conscious choice, and I think somehow that Nick's crowd has kind of found their way back in, basically by criticizing other conservatives. But I don't It will be interesting to see where it goes, but I don't think it's ultimately going to be any kind of answer.
Because I think that what happened already is we already see the problems with it. It is because it's made up with so many people that were that have already disavowed the former alt-right stuff or whatever. Like the first event that went badly for them were some of their people got owned at this event, and Charlie Kirk made them look stupid. Like the first time that happened, they already started all turning on each other, and it turned into this total shit show on Twitter where you had them all of a sudden they were all fighting about who's to blame about it, and what direction it's got to be. We can't have these people asking these kinds of questions and whatnot. So you're dealing with a former subset of the alt-right that was already on shaky ground to begin with. We're ready to, at the first sign of publicity for the bad publicity for the alt-right, these people scattered like cockroaches. And you see the same thing happening again, because it's the core of it is made up of these kinds of people. So
before I wrap things up, I'll ask both Matt and Brandon, if you were there at the Q&A, what questions would you have asked Charlie Kirk?
Let me think about that. I mean, I would ask him, what good is it doing us making things economically better for people who don't want nationalists to exist? Reupers are asking questions like this, so I can appreciate that element of it. I haven't watched all the Q&A sessions. But yeah, that would essentially be my question. Why is your emphasis so much on, helping big corporations, even big tech in certain cases, making things, giving them tax cuts, making sure that their liberty is protected when these people quite literally want to, quash any kind of anti-globalism or tribal identity out of existence? Because I actually would give Charlie Kirk the benefit of the doubt. I mean, I think he does. I don't think he is, a complete globalist. I think that.
Well, he flat out says he believes America is a placeholder for timeless ideas. That's basically liberal globalism.
Well, he is. I don't think he actually has. I think some conservative commentators do. I just would give him the benefit of the doubt that I don't think he has this big secret disdain for the people who voted for Donald Trump. I think he does want to. He does genuinely, think that these people are salt of the earth or something. Fully fathom the degree to which these people are seen as a roadblock in the way of what I mean. He believes it's Americanism, which he thinks is good, but in reality, it's a kind of globalism, which I don't see how anyone could think was good if they really looked at it.
And yeah, that point is actually brought up by a lot of dissident rightists. That point that basically conservatives are economically rewarding those same forces that are pushing for things like globalism, mass immigration, deplatforming, censorship. So that's something I don't think I ever heard that being brought up in the Q&A. It definitely should have been.
Yeah, no, they could probably be asking more articulate questions. I mean, I you see this stuff and you think it's going to be a challenge like that, but then half the time it's stuff about, gay people
or stupid questions about Israel or something like that.
Oh yeah, that stuff is ridiculous. And Brandon, what would you have asked?
If it were me, I would probably just ignore the whole thing, because I think these people are irrelevant. Their ideology is it's such a non-starter. I'm not even sure that it could win anyway. You'd almost be better off just ignoring them than turning in these figures. If I had to ask something, though, I would always ask these some of these hardcore free market conservatives is when they always talk about the GDP and whatnot, and say in what sense are these companies that you want to give tax breaks for, in what sense are they American companies if they're offshoring all of their jobs, they're hiring people overseas, and then they're outsourcing the employment here, and then they're bringing in these visa workers. So if these companies are making these large profits, how does that translate into America?
This America is a bit off topic money. Of what we were talking about, but I just want to say it anyway. I mean, it's interesting to think about, because I think there's been a not a bait and switch in my lifetime, but maybe in yours, Brandon, and certainly in the lives of a lot of boomers. Like, I think there was probably a time where supporting business was supporting America, and where, you know, trickle-down economics was kind of working in America, you know, if you want to look at the 50s or something, and that this stuff did have a sort of national character. But at some point, and, you know, starting sometime maybe in the 80s and definitely over the past 10 years, it's gone completely differently, just based on, basically based on technology and a more connected world, it's become the globalist class. You know, it used to be possible to be something, you know, to be somewhat of an international, like someone who has dealings, you know, internationally, but still be pro-American.
Right, like Rockefeller or someone
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, and not that those people didn't have problems, but it's just very different now. The dynamics have completely, you know, 100% changed to the point where, you know, because America obviously did used to represent something. I really don't think it does anymore beyond a global marketplace, and that's just something that evolved quite just without anyone really making that decision. It just evolved with technology and with economy.
Well, and also, like, it evolved, I think, slowly out of these free trade moves that were made in the 70s and 80s, which were like very, very profitable in the beginning, but over the long term, they have not been as these like jobs have been.
Exactly.
And now you have like I said, you know, Microsoft has an Indian CEO, you know, when Microsoft, you know, makes a ton of money or something, like, woohoo, but like, you know, That's not in what sense is that like American company doing better? Like
exactly.
the money, none of the money is going here. Like,
yeah, no. Well, you could look at it like the, it was kind of it's an overused metaphor, a Faustian bargain. You know, originally, you know, the Reaganomics and stuff, you know, brought a real economic pop even to small towns. And it was this great, you know, white American identity thing to be pro-capitalist. And that worked for however many decades, and then the knife just started twisting in our hand, and that's what I see happening. Groups like Turning Point USA are just willfully blind to the fact that the dynamics have changed so much.
Yeah. Anyhow, we're at the end of the show, so I would like to thank Brandon Adamson and Matthew Pegas for being on.
Yeah, sure thing. Good to be on.
Yeah, great to be on again.